I love a beautiful lawn. You love a beautiful lawn. Everybody loves a beautiful lawn, but they don't love how long it takes and how difficult it can be. And that is where True Green comes into play because it's the easiest and most affordable way to get that beautiful lawn. Let's be real. You've got plenty of other things to do in your free time than focus on your lawn care. So let True Green take care of all of that hard work while you get to do everything else that you want to do, like go play golf. Here's what you need to do. Visit truegreen.com, okay? It allows you to do you. Let them do the lawn care. And if you visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, that is all guaranteed. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. It's truegreen.com. Get started now.
Welcome back to the First Cut Podcast here on CBS Sports. We've got Kyle Porter. He's still out in the San Francisco area. We are joined by Sean Martin, PGAtour.com, regular contributor and friend of this podcast. Gentlemen, this is another major championship you all have gotten to spend on-site together. What's the, you know, as the crew starts to get back together and then break up again, I mean, do y'all sing like end of summer camp songs and kumbayas and have a ceremony on your final dinner together or something?
There's a lot of, you know, meaningful hugs, especially too, because it varies greatly, like when you'll see people again. You know, you might catch some people in 3 weeks, the Open Championship. You might not see some people for months. You might not see some people till Augusta. So it's kind of like, it's like a mini high school graduation every time we say goodbye.
Yeah, this is I was telling Sean this morning, so we're playing some golf out here today, and I think this is my last golf travel day until Augusta next year. So like 10 months.
Which is
weird.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, then we've also got the golf travel days of when we'll just bring you back up to North Carolina for a big air quotes right now work trip, right? So we can go do more research around.
We're covering the Raleigh Durham Amateur or something.
Yeah,
I mean, I would have said Wyndham Championship. That's in Chip's neck of the woods.
Yeah. The Wyndham. I mean, listen, if it wasn't so close to the college football season, I would definitely join the party that just sort of annually makes that a big fun spectacle. It's a great event, but normally by that time I'm already memorizing the depth charts of the entire MAC conference just to get myself ready for the MACtion coming up later. All right, so we've got a U.S. Open champion, Gary Woodland. Kyle and I had a great late night chat. You should go back and listen to it if you haven't already. So I want to start probably with one of the places where we seem to look at Brooks Koepka, Sean, in this U.S. Open effort, and we seem to be awarding him a championship effort, though he did not claim the championship. Why have we gotten so soft with these participation trophies with Brooks Koepka?
I like that. That's a good question. I like that.
So I do think, you know, Brooks on the back nine, I think he had some chances. I mean, Gary Woodland definitely won this. I mean, Brooks put some pressure on him. Brooks pulled within one shot, but he didn't. He missed a lot of drives to the right, and it didn't really seem like he maybe put as much pressure on Gary as he could have. Gary never was out of the lead. You know, you thought after Brooks birdied four of the first five holes, you thought, I mean, I tweeted jokingly, like, has there ever been a 59 in the final round of the U.S. Open? It looked like he was just coming to burn the house down. And then, you know, he didn't birdie six, which is kind of an unforgivable mistake, and he missed a short birdie putt at seven. And that was kind of the story of the rest of the round, is really he couldn't put as much pressure as we thought. But at the same time, you know, it's a major, 156 guys, and Brooks finished three shots ahead of third place. So sometimes, too, like even your best effort, it gets beat. And, you know, Brooks hit the ball great again this week at the U.S. Open. And he just didn't make any putts, and sometimes, too, that's just the way the game goes.
Did people take your 59 tweet seriously?
Some people did, unfortunately.
Fortunately. Sad. No, that's great. I want to know that someone is taking that seriously. keeps us all honest in the fake media. Right. So what I saw from Brooks's little bit of time after the round on television was that he seemed to be pretty comfortable with his game, comfortable with where everything is. Like, we're going to step back and you know, I very easily sort of put this in the envelope with Brooks's effort at the Masters this year, right? Where, like, yeah, he was there, but there were some mistakes coming down the stretch where the opportunity to win probably moved out a little bit further than he was going to be able to reach. And so, like, I look at Koepka and I feel like even though he didn't win this, we should not change our expectations or our adjustments or our rating of Brooks Koepka. If he shows up to a major championship, I think we should probably still consider him the favorite.
Well, it is interesting because I think you bring up a good point. Like, imagine if Brooks was Rory or Spieth, it feels like we would be looking back on his back nine and saying, oh, well, mistake here, should have birdied here, miss putt here. And instead with him, we're like, he played pretty well. You know, he was pretty good. Like he gave it great effort. And so I don't know why that is. Maybe it's because
He's won majors more recently and Spieth hasn't in a while. I mean, Spieth actually, you know, with the Open Championship, you've got that, but with Rory too, like we keep trying to inch Rory and Spieth back to this, this past form. And that's why I think that what we are seeing from Brooks here is a more of a continuation of his current form.
Yeah, and so maybe we just define like the golf that was played by the guy who played it, like based on who that was. I mean, it seems like we kind of do, but he did have opportunities, and I don't know if it matters because again, Woodland's 13 under, but I don't know. Maybe he doesn't make that putt on 18 if he's up to one or whatever. But I do think that we sort of view some of this golf, especially on Sunday, through the lens of whoever it is who just played it.
And I do think too, it's more kudos to Gary Woodland because I think in a lot of situations where you have a guy trying to win his first major at a U.S. Open, where you know missing fairways is so penal, and then you have Brooks kind of breathing down his neck, I think most times you could count on that guy coming back a little bit and falling back into a tie for the lead or falling behind Brooks when he pulls within one. But Gary just didn't do that. He was pretty flawless coming down the stretch. It didn't look like a guy who was trying to close out his first major.
Sean, did you think that Brooks should have hit? Because I was standing there with him on 18 and he pulls 3-wood. And I'm going like, wow, that's interesting to me. Did you think he should have hit driver there?
I don't know. It's such a tough angle that I feel like driver, you might be, I mean, at one point too, I mean, you're Brooks, maybe go for broke, but that angle's so hard that the incremental gain in advantage of hitting driver isn't worth the risk because you're just having to push it so far up there and that angle is so awkward. So I usually defer to players in their decision making. And I think, I mean, Brooks knew he had to make four there. And I think he did what he felt like he had to do to give himself his best opportunity.
Speaking of defer to players and their decision making, Sean, what kind of inside gossip are you hearing about the boiling tensions in the Spieth Greller relationship?
Wow. I thought we were going to go Houston Rockets locker room for a second there. I think that, you know, someone asked Jordan about his relationship with Michael after the second round, and Jordan said kind of that's the just what makes our relationship work. And I kind of agree just from seeing them. Like, Jordan is a verbal processor, and so he just needs to get it out. He kind of said that in the interview. He said that, you know, these are things I used to keep in my head, and now with Michael I can get them out and just be done with them. And so I think that it works because I think Michael can take it and doesn't take it personally, so it doesn't stew for a few holes. Like, Jordan just says it, gets it out, moves on, and then Michael hears it, and then just kind of moves on with it as well. And so I think it just helps them move on quicker from mistakes.
I think that we do this thing with them where it's like, then it's a fun narrative. Oh, Spieth's going to fire somebody. Won't this be great? You know, like, oh, there's this drama and like all this stuff. And it's like, maybe, but like, maybe it's just like standard operating procedure for like just the way he like plays golf, you know, like that. And I think we talked about that Sunday Chip, but it just seems like this is the way it is. And it's not as big of a deal as it's not like he's like cussing him out on national. I don't know. I just feel like it gets blown up into this thing that it's just not. And I don't think that any big changes are coming. I don't know. Even in kind of some of the people I've talked to, though, like people do think a change is coming. I don't know if it's, you know, coach or camp or caddy. I who knows what it will be. But I'm not in on that take. I think he's going to keep grinding until he gets out of it. And then we'll get to the other side of it, and he'll start winning again, and it'll be like the story, the narrative will be like, see, Spieth believed in the people around him, and it's just like, I don't know. It's a weird cycle.
So yeah, I think, too, the way Jordan just even talks to himself on the golf course, it would be like, oh, Jordan's going to fire himself. Like, listen to the way he's talking to himself. Like, Jordan just needs to kind of process that. Yeah, that's my take.
Well, before I wander into these waters without some information, I mean – how long does your average player caddy relationship last?
I mean, this is a longer one. I mean, so he turned pro in 2013. Michael was a school teacher, took a 1 year leave of absence, to this kid coming out of college. And then luckily that panned out. So he didn't have to return to his day job. So, but it's been, we're going on 6.5 years now, which that is pretty lengthy. I mean, Ricky and Skovran have been together since Ricky turned pro in 2009. Those are probably a couple of your longest high profile caddy player relationships right now among the elite.
JT and Jimmy.
Yeah.
DJ AJ.
JT had a different guy when he first came out. But yeah, so they're up there definitely, but probably going on 5 years or so. Four or five years.
I think that's where I'm coming from because, you know, to be introduced to Spieth in the beginning of his professional career, we were also introduced to Greller, right? Like, yeah. Wasn't that almost part of the selling point? I mean, he has a celebrity status as much as you could attain as a caddy on the professional tour. And, like, to me, it just feels like there's some inevitability. Most player-caddy relationships are not going to last forever. This is one of the most high-profile ones. And, you know, whether this is... This might be part of, you know, Spieth's play, or this might just be like, look, you can only be part of this travel team and have that kind of intimate relationship and that kind of intense relationship for so long. I thought Porath did a good job of writing it with giving a little bit of color. He talked about, like Greller getting the support from the other caddy, the I love you man coming off. And I was like, oh, wow. So you know, we obviously know that Greller appears to be well-liked among that community. And I think that Michael Greller, like if there is a split coming and it might not be soon, it might be in 3 years, might be in 5 years, sure sounds like he's done enough, at least with himself on the PGA Tour, that he would probably... like a lot of caddies that we do know their names, or the few caddies that we do know their names, probably going to go link up with another star, and then it'll just be another chapter of their professional life.
Matthew Wolf.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, let's go. Absolutely.
I think Jordan likes consistency. He's had the same swing coach since he was, I think, 13 or 14. He's had the same caddy the whole time he was out there. Like, I think he likes the consistency, and I know that, you know, like, look, it goes badly in baseball, and the manager is the first guy to get the can because you can't fire the players, and so Jordan can't fire himself right now. But I do think that he likes the consistency, and I think that in the middle of this, like, tumultuous time, I think that he would rather have consistency around him than trying to adjust to something new.
All right, So Jordan Spieth, 76 on Sunday, sort of like unravels just a little bit. I found more frustration or disappointment looking at the case of Dustin Johnson, and I don't think that I've been able to really put my finger or diagnose why this seemed to duck expectations. I mean, it was Kyle's pick to win, and we were sort of just like dialed into this idea that Dustin at Pebble, and you know, he's going to be right there in the mix. He's got a really, really high floor, but this championship got away from him. So, like, Sean, first, like, what do you think happened with DJ?
Putting. Look at his pull up his putting.
Yeah,
we're looking at his stats right now. He was
78th in strokes gained putting out of the 79 players to make the cut, negative 6 strokes. So if he putts average, which is not asking too much out of DJ, he's 500 and he's kind of in the mix. That definitely, yeah.
He's like a top 15 putter on the PGA Tour right now. It's disappointing shit because he tied Brandon Wu. who's a junior at Stanford and played with him in the final round. It's like, what are we doing here?
Brandon Wu was a Stanford graduate.
Senior at Stanford, sorry. Oh, yeah, he's the kid that said...
he wants to be walking down the 18th fairway in his cap and gown.
And he did. He made the cut. Good for him. Sean joked joked to Andy yesterday that he's the new big woo-woo, replacing Siwoo Kim. which is great. Yeah, I don't know. You can do DJ if you want.
And also, I mean, he got to 4-under in the third round. He just kind of... You know, he had a chance there if he could have stepped on it a little bit. But, I mean, playing the first 7 holes at Pebble and 3 over is it's kind of like what happened with Tiger. I mean, those are holes – I mean, Brooks played those in 4-under and probably easily could have played them in 6-under. I mean, those were birdie opportunities that, you know, he had a chance and just didn't really seize it. And at the end of the day, when you're putting like that, you can't.
One of my favorite images of the tournament was the Fox drone just hovering out over the Pacific with AJ, his brother, his caddy, just traipsing up the cliff off number 4 that was on Sunday, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, I guess we're doing this again. DJ on the front 9 at Pebble on a Sunday at the US Open. So yeah, he just, I don't know, man. I just thought T35 was super disappointing.
My favorite thing going to the drones real quick was the seagulls attacking the drone because they thought it was a threatening animal.
They are a threatening animal. Good on you, seagulls. These drones are littering up the sky. Nature, nature strike back.
There was a lot going on.
You had the blimp, you had the drones.
So Sunday, I'm on 7 watching Brooks, and you've got the blimp way too low, way too loud. The drones. You've got animals, you've got paddleboarders, you've got a guy flying an airplane that has a sign for Bubba's Burgers. Might have actually been Bubba Watson, considering he missed the cut. Things were happening and very quickly. And I mean, seriously, like with all that stuff going on, I think it's actually legitimately somewhat hard to focus as like the leader of a tournament like that. Because, look, that stuff, no offense to, you know, Abraham Answer, but that stuff is not happening whenever he's playing the 7th hole at Pebble Beach. And it is when Brooks is playing it, when Woodland's playing it. It's legitimately harder to focus, I think. And I don't know. We don't really talk about that when we talk about golf tournaments, but I think that's a – you know, I don't know that those guys would say that, but I think it's a real factor, like when they're trying to focus in on a given hole.
Well, that's what we're asking from our champions, right? Of a mental game to be able to maintain focus in conditions where no one else would.
Aerial attacking them with blimps and drones.
Yeah. Is this what we want golf to be? Yeah.
The USGA is sending drones after you now.
One last thing on Dustin Johnson. I don't know if you saw anyone comment on this, but truly the moments of high comedy on Sunday night were twice on the back 9 out of nowhere. The coverage goes from this thrilling, you know, Woodland and Koepka and all this movement on the leaderboard and people are trying to get to 10 under and they're trying to go low. And then we just rip away from all of that to show Dustin Johnson at +1 trying to make a birdie. And it's a miss. And then they go back again. DJ at 17. And he comes up short again. Like, we just kept breaking away from the contention of the U.S. Open to watch Dustin Johnson, like, 9 strokes back, missing birdie putts. It was fantastic.
Yeah, it's not great.
On the other side, more takeaways from the men on the scene. Next.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. And that's because the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe has some great features like the available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads, and much, much more. So think about those places that you want to go, the things that you'd like to do this weekend, and where the Santa Fe can take you. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, so what are, like, what, Sean, what else is on your, like, call sheet? Who are you starting to feel spicy about right now as you're starting to review your experience at the U.S. Open?
Xander, I mean, Xander, top six finishes now in four of his last six. It's kind of like Brooks Light in that he just doesn't have a win there yet, but you're kind of seeing, I mean, this is what Brooks did for years, starting really in 2014 with the U.S. Open. He finished fourth, kind of when people didn't quite know who he was. He still was over in Europe. He was consistently contending, finishing top 20 in majors, then he goes on this run, and Xander's kind of doing the same thing of just, he's putting himself there, he's putting himself in position, and so you'd have to think one is coming his way, maybe not sooner than later, just because they are so hard to win, but eventually.
I mean, it's a without a doubt for Xander Schauffele. I mean, that's the, like, you look here, and the volatility makes it really, really fun in terms of just sort of, like, his playing style and the way that this can go. I mean, he was not particularly accurate off the tee. He was not among the, you know, top 20 and hitting greens in regulation. Like, there was nothing that was, like, statistically excellent from my site right now, but yet he finishes near the top of the leaderboard. I mean, isn't that the book on him right now? Is that he's really, really good. There's no one place where you would say that he is number one among the field or among the competition in this aspect of his game, but we keep looking up, and I don't know, he's got the fourth best score in the tournament.
Well, I think, I mean, it's pretty, that's the way it goes with Xander, I think, because we love to be able to pin something on a guy, right? Like, oh, Jordan Spieth, amazing putter, great iron player. DJ hits it so far. You know, you love to just, we all love these, like, one-sentence descriptors of a guy. Like, oh, he's the, you know, basketball player guy, or he's the, you know, whatever guy. And so I think we love that descriptor, and you don't really have one for Xander because, like you said, kind of nothing stands out. He just does everything pretty well. I mean, the guy's won twice this year. He's finished third and second at a major this year, and yet, I mean, outside of us three, I mean, I don't hear a ton of people just hammering Xander Schauffele takes.
I've continued to just light dollars on fire with Xander Schauffele to win a major odds, and I'm going to keep doing it until it cashes, and I'll probably break even.
By the way, I'm looking at Koepka's, we were just talking about, like, top, like, high finishes. So since Spieth won the U.S. Open at Chambers in 15, Brooks has played in 15 majors, and he finished in the top 13 in 13 of them.
Is there at least one missed cut there, or are they all made cuts?
All made cuts. One T21, one T39, everything else inside the top 13.
Gracious.
Justin Ray had a great stat that it's Tiger, Jack, and Brooks are the only guys to finish first or second in four consecutive majors.
But, you know, Gary Woodland's actually more scared of Xander than he is of Brooks. We saw that when Xander chased him down in Hawaii.
He mentioned that.
He talked about that.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, because, I mean, that's the thing with Gary. He was 0 for 7 with 54 hole leads on the PGA Tour. And the last one was at Kapalua, and he's like, look, you know, there were a couple in there where he shot over par on Sunday and he just didn't seize the opportunity. Kapalua was like, look, I had the lead. I shot 500 par and I just got blitzed. And so sometimes you just can't do anything about it. But, I mean, for a guy who was 0 for 7 with a 54-hole lead, like I said before, when he didn't look like a guy who was chasing his first major, he didn't look like a guy who had never converted a 54-hole lead before.
What about – all right, so Woodland, moving forward. What's the – like, yeah. Like, how do you how do you look at him differently? Do you look at him differently?
I think it's a progression. I think he had a really good quote in his Sunday press conference where he was asked about just, you know, did he feel like he was behind his fellow competitors on the PGA Tour because he'd played basketball? And he said, you know, I always felt like I was behind on a golf standpoint because I didn't devote myself just to golf. in high school and even my first year of college, but I never felt like I was behind him in competitiveness because he is a very competitive guy. And there were a lot of great stories about, you know, how he played through a broken finger. He took a charge and got a collapsed trachea and then 4 days later put up 20 in a basketball game. So he does have that toughness we need of our champions. And I do think, I mean, he's 35, so he's not young by any stretch of the imagination. I say that as a 36-year-old. But he is a work in progress, and I think we're starting to see that. So he talked a lot about, you know, the short game work with Pete Cowan. Like, that was the missing part. You know, I talked to Matt Kuchar because he's good friends with Gary, and he said, you know, Gary used to be easy money in practice rounds, and that's not the case anymore because his short game used to be a liability. And, I mean, we saw that chip on 17. That's pretty insane to do that. Jeff Ogilvy was talking to Andy at the Fried Egg this week and said, if you can chip it off tight surfaces like putting greens, like, your short game is tidy and you're in a good spot. And so I think that we're finally seeing the well-rounded physical tools to complement that just raw athleticism. And, you know, he's now won in two consecutive seasons. Even before this year, he was in the top 10 in the FedEx Cup. He had two runners up and like five other top 10s. He was having a good, consistent season. So I think being healthy and having that well-rounded game and then having obviously the physical attributes, like, I'm not going to say Gary Woodland's going to win five majors in 20 times, but I think that, you know, we're going to see him be a consistent, you know, win most years for the next 5-10 years and pick up a win here and there. And I think we'll see more of him.
I think here's my thing, Chip. So he's played in 245 tour events over the last 10 years. That, I believe, is fewer than Ricky Fowler. I think Fowler's around like 255 or something like that. And I think if, like, let's say Fowler won this U.S. Open at Pebble, I think we would do the whole, like, oh, is the floodgates, could be the floodgates, you know?
Uh-huh.
But with Woodland, maybe because he's older, maybe because he's less known, maybe because he's not as marketable or prominent or whatever, we sort of write it up to like a one-off thing. When I don't know that it is. I mean, he's an unbelievable ball striker. He's a top, what would you say, Sean, 12, 8, 10, 15 ball striker on tour?
Yeah, I try to group guys in 12s. I would say top 12.
Of course.
Why?
Yeah, why do you do 12?
You said it. I was just responding to that.
Thanks. So, yeah, I just, you know, he's the type of guy, and I think I said this on Sunday, like Hideki, like, I don't know.
You're speaking my language.
Well, who's somebody else who's a great ball striker, bad putter?
Well, so here's Woodland's stats this year. 12th in strokes gained off the tee, 17th in strokes gained approach. So in the top 20 of both of those. And it's a short list of guys who are in the top 20 in both. And then 120th in strokes gained putting. And so what you're looking at here, you're looking at a long hitter who hits the ball well. And so he's going to give himself a lot of opportunities for birdie and a lot of opportunities to play well, just because when you're hitting it that long and having short irons in, that's going to be the case. So what it is it's just going to be putter dependent. You know, he'll have weeks where when the putter's hot with his ball striking being so consistent, he'll win, and then he'll just have a lot of middling finishes. But I'd rather have a guy who's a good ball striker and a bad putter than a bad ball striker and a great putter, because the first one's going to have a lot more chances to win.
Yeah, kind of Adam Scotty.
Yeah, it's easier to ride a hot putter for a week than it is to you can do that. You can't just all of a sudden for 1 week become an amazing ball striker.
Yeah, so all that to say, like, I think he will be – I mean, he's got three top tens in his last, what, four majors now? Five?
Yeah, two PGAs and then this.
Something like that. And I think he will be a – I don't know if he'll win another one, but I think he'll at least be a contender at a few more over the next 5 or 6 years.
So he's American Adam Scott.
Yeah, he's not as good looking, but
says who? Yeah. Man, come on, that's some Big 12 hate right there.
People were doing the rock chalk thing up 18. It was kind of cool. Like the thing they do at the end of basketball games, the like where it gets really quiet, and then they do like the chant or whatever.
Yeah. The really slow yeah. Rock chalk. Yeah.
Yeah. It was great. Trying to convince Urban Meyer to take over for Les Miles.
Wasn't Urban Meyer rolling with Koepka?
Yeah. Yeah. Poor ass said he was scouting linebackers.
For USC. just trying to get ready. All right, so what about Justin Rose? 74 on Sunday. Is that a result of the, like, what we always say that this it's not sustainable? You know, like he was just the unsustainable putting on Thursday. Then all of a sudden the ball striking gets a little bit better, but putting gets a little bit shakier. Then on Saturday shoots, you know, 68, but then is that just a matter of everything just kind of fell apart down the stretch?
Yeah, I mean, the fact that he was even in contention is pretty amazing. He was not swinging it well. He was not hitting it well. And so it's a testament to his short game and just kind of the well-rounded game that he's developed in the last few years. The short game and putting has improved a lot in the last couple of years. So I think for him to even kind of be in contention and have a chance was a bonus, and then it finally did just catch up with him on Sunday.
I mean, I kept saying every day we would ride to the course on the media bus, and anybody who would listen to me, I kept saying, Justin Rose is going to shoot a 75 today. Justin Rose is going to shoot a 75 today. And then we get to Sunday, and I'm like, maybe he's not. Like, maybe he's just going to just piece this together all week. But I kept saying it, and finally he shoots a 74 on Sunday. And he's just – I mean, I watched him for a while on – when was that? I think Thursday. And you're just – no, I think it was Friday because he was a Spieth and Tiger. And I'm like, I don't – he's like – hitting shots thin, and like he just was, it was sort of reminiscent of Spieth at Bethpage, where you're like, there's no, like, the center of the club face is nowhere to be found. Like, he just was not hitting it very well, which is very, like, unlike Justin Rose. And his short game just kind of kept him in it until it couldn't anymore.
Sean, do you have any groundbreaking Tiger takes before we get out of here?
No, I don't. I think.
Do you have any Rory takes?
Fewer Rory takes. I think, I mean, Ryan Lavner spotted KT tape on Tiger's neck. And I think that, you know, I think when you're a 43-year-old guy with four back surgeries, like, you just have some good days and some bad days physically. And so I think it's rare. I think it might be rare that we're going to go a week where Tiger feels good for all 4 days and he's kind of firing on all cylinders for all 4 days, just because that's the reality of kind of what he's been through. And so, you know, unfortunately we didn't get that 50-shot win we were all clamoring for, but I mean, that's the new Tiger. Is he's capable of winning majors, he's capable of winning tour events, but, you know, he has to have a week where his body agrees with him, and he's not just going to – it's not as easy as maybe he made a look at the Masters.
Hey, Chip, we buried the lead here.
Chez?
Huh?
Chez Reavie?
No, there's a new world amateur number one.
Not for long.
Huh?
Not for long.
No, I'm saying there's about to be a new world amateur number
one. Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
So Victor Hovland's number one. I think he was number one going into the U.S. Open.
I think so. And then finished 12th. By the way, this is like my Super Bowl. You got Victor Hovland, Matthew Wolf making their pro debuts, Colin Morikawa.
Justin Suh,
very excited for the Travelers Championship.
So Victor Hovland's number one in the world amateur golf ranking. Matthew Wolf number two, and then your boy Takumi Kanaya number three.
Shares the same alma mater as Hideki Matsuyama, Tohoku Fukushi University, which one of the best logos in golf. It's like this penguin with like a exposed head that's like a exposed scalp that's like a golf ball. It's something.
Yeah, that sounds insane.
But Tohoku Fukushi University is basically like the Oklahoma State of Japan.
I've always said that, actually.
You have always said that. That's crazy. Is that? I mean, you guys are just two peas in a pod right there.
Yeah, we're lockstep right here.
No Rory thoughts here, Sean?
Man, the disparity between the two Sundays, right? I mean, Canada, the guy, I mean, he's lighting the nation of Canada on fire. And then, you know, we get to Pebble Beach and it was
they should have flown him back out for the Raptors parade.
He should have worn the Raptors jersey on the first tee on Sunday. I don't know. But, I mean, you have a guy who shoots, and I said this last time at Canada, like, and I think you and Kyle talked about it, like, when he's on, he makes it look so easy. So then when he's off, it's just that much more disappointing because you're like, dude, it's so easy for you. How can you not do this every week? And it was pretty disappointing. And it's so funny, too, because, like, the 61 on Sunday, like, wasn't fully unexpected. We're like, yeah, he's very capable of doing that because he goes on these just heaters that are incredible. But then also the 72 on Sunday at the U.S. Open, like wasn't totally unexpected. We're like, yeah, you know, I mean, sometimes he just kind of does this and he finished ninth at the US Open and it looks fine on Wikipedia, but like he never really had the chance.
Well, I mean, it's not just a 72 because there were many 72s that were shot on at Pebble Beach on Sunday, but most of them didn't go like this. 6 birdies, 3 bogeys and 2 double bogeys.
Yeah.
Yeah. The double on 2 to start off was, and even the first hole was kind of shaky. And then he doubles 2 and it was like an immediate ejection. And you're like, and again, I mean, like what Brooks did on those holes. I mean, Rory started the day 6 under. I mean, you can play those in 4 or 5 under and get into it.
All right. Well, where are you guys playing today?
Pasatiempo. It's a quaint Alistair McKenzie gem in Santa Cruz. It's actually where he lived. It was one of his favorite courses, if not his favorite course he designed. And then Kyle's flying out, and I'm just going to spend the afternoon playing the Olympic Club.
Didn't Pasatiempo, like, the idea of it lead to parts of Augusta National?
No, it was Cyprus, 1929 U.S. Amateur at Pebble Beach.
We'll be here for another 30 minutes.
Bobby Jones lost early, and so he went over and played Cyprus, as you would, and then saw it and was so impressed. He's like, I need to hire this guy for National.
It wasn't Pasa?
No, he was friends with Marion Hollins, who was they own Pasatiempo. I was friends with Bobby Jones also, so there's that connection too.
Okay.
So anyway, if I got that wrong, we'll get emails and we'll make correction on the next show.
who's getting strokes? What's the game?
We do consistent 2-a-side. It gets pretty competitive.
Yeah, Sean gives me 2-a-side. Yesterday, it came down to like this is great, by the way. I was talking about our golf. Yesterday, it comes down to the 17th hole, and yeah, he's one up. And I'm playing pretty poorly. And I just pump one down the middle of this par 5, hit it to like 30 feet, have that for eagle. And we're walking up. He's like all over the place. He goes, you're going to 3-putt this, and I'm gonna putt in from off the green to beat you. And that's exactly what happened.
Hey, they say visualization is a big key to success in golf.
It was very disappointing. And then Andy hit a ball on 18 with a persimmon driver, which was spectacular. It was unbelievable.
Good stuff.
It was good stuff.
All right, you can follow him on Twitter at Kyle Porter CBS. You can follow him at PGA Tour S Martin. Gentlemen, enjoy the golf. Thank you very much.
Thanks guys.